bottom of Samach Zayin Amid Beis by the two dots. It's 15 lines from the bottom. So the Gemara says, Pshita ba'asra de misalke ve'amar lo mistalekna, haka'amar de lo mistalekna. Ela ba'asra de lo misalke ve'amar mistalekna mai. Tzorech lemikra minei olo. So the Gemara makes the following observation. Let's say you live in a place where the practice was that if, let's say, Reuven lends money to Shimon. Now, Reuven wants to protect against Shimon defaulting on the loan. So he wants some kind of a security. So it's not a literal collateral in the normal sense of the word, but essentially he says to Shimon, listen, I want to be able to consume the produce of your field as a security against you defaulting on the loan. So if they live in a place where the practice was that once the lovet pays up his debt, that now Reuven the Malva gets kicked off the field, he's no longer entitled to the produce. So if that's the practice, and Reuven specifically stipulated prior to lending the money to Shimon that I'm only lending you this money on the condition that you don't do that, they don't kick me off the field. So again, that was the condition. That's what Shimon agreed to. The question is, what if it was the reverse? What if they lived in a place where the practice was not to kick the Malva off the field, but he specifically said, once you pay up my debt, that's it. You can kick me off the field. The question is, does that condition require a formalized kinyan in order to go into effect? Or no? Is the mere verbal stipulation sufficient to now kick Reuven the Malva off of the field from consuming the produce? So the Gemara says, this is a machlokas. Rav Papa Amar lo tzarech lemikna minei. Rav Sheshes berei de Ravidi Amar tzarech lemikna minei. Vehilchasa tzarech lemikna minei. So the Gemara says, this is a machlokas. And we paskin, like the second shita, like Rav Sheshes, that note that a formalized kinyan is required in order to override the regular standard going practice. If they want to be, in other words, if the Lova wants as enforceable that he can now kick the Malva off the field, when that is contra to the normal practice of the town, even though that's what he said would happen, there needs to be a formalized kinyan at the outset from when the money was initially lent out. Okay, then the Gemara says, Omar Ezel va'ise zuze lo achil, Ezel ve'etrach va'ise zuze, Ravina Omar achil, Umar zutra berei de Rav Mari Omar lo achil, ve'hilchasa lo achil. So the Gemara records two scenarios. Let's say the Lova turns to the Malva and says, I am going to get the money right now to go pay back your debt. I'll be back in 2 hours with your money. Once he makes that declaration, everyone agrees that Reuven, the Malva, is no longer allowed to eat the produce because he just told him, I'm going to get the money. However, what if instead of saying, I'm going to get the money that I have sitting in my house, I just have to go, I have to go back and get it, he says, he adds in the word etrach, I'm going to try, I'm going to exert myself to get the money. So that obviously means that the Lova does not have the money on hand. He's going to try his best to go and gather up the money. So that's also a machlokas in the Gemara, whether that's considered to be sufficient grounds to now kick the Malva off the field to no longer consume the produce. And again, the Gemara paskins that in this scenario, lo achil, even though the Lova is... Yeah, I'm sorry. So that's exactly part of the Gemara's question here. That's exactly part of the issue here. Meaning, is the fact that he's allowed to consume the produce, is that merely security against the loan? The same way that I can take a mashkon from you, right? I can take a collateral from you. So that's not ribis. That's securing against you defaulting on the loan. So the question is, how do we view this? In other words, is the fact that that the malva is consuming produce, is that ribis or not? That's really going to depend on a lot of these details. That's exactly what the Gemara is trying to figure out here. So in the second scenario, the Gemara also paskins that once the lova says, I'm going to exert myself to get the money, that's also sufficient grounds to kick the Malva off the field, and if he continues consuming produce, of course, that will be a violation of ribbis. Then the Gemara records the following story. Rav Kahana v'Rav Papa v'Rav Ashi lo achle ben achyasa, Ravina achil ben achyasa. So let's say you had a scenario where the Loved did not pay off his debt in full, but he paid off part of the debt. He started to decrease, make a dent into the debt a little bit, so he paid off half the debt. So the Gemara says that Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, and Rav Ashi, once they saw that their loves, their debtors, started to pay off their debt, even though it wasn't paid in full, they said, okay, that's it. We're going to back away. We're not going to eat the produce anymore because they were concerned that would run into issues of ribis. And Ravina said no. Ravina said, until the debt is fully squared away, I will continue consuming produce off the field. Amar Mar Zutra, my time of demand to Achil ben Achyasa. What's the logic behind Ravina? Why does he think that he can keep on eating produce until the debt is fully paid off? So the Gemara says, Midi dahava aste achuza. Ste achuza lav afal gav deka achil Michael Pere Tuva, Amaracha Manaka Parik Lach Barba Azuze, Hachanami Loshna. The logic behind Ravina is that he compares this scenario of a case where a lovat makes a dent into the debt as opposed to fully paying off the debt. He compares that to a scenario of Steachuza. Steachuza is a famous sugya that appears at the end of Parshas Bechukosai. It's Psukim in Parshas Bechukosai about a person who has an ancestral field that he inherited from his family, and he consecrates the field, and now he wants to redeem that field. So Psukim and Bechukosai tell us that you only have to pay basically the equivalent of a sela per year, which is the same as four zuz or four dinar per year for every year until Yovel. However many years there are until Yovel, you pay either, in other words, you pay four zuz, four dinar per year times the number of years until Yovel. Now, obviously, that is not going to match up to the value of the produce that the person who had the field, that the recipient of the field was gaining from that field, because the produce he consumed was far more than the equivalent of four zuz or four dinar a year until the years of Yovel. And yet, the Torah still says that's considered to be a valid form of redemption. So presumably, says Ravina, even though the fact is that he's starting to pay off his debt, and the produce that I'm consuming doesn't match up to what is still owed, I can still continue consuming from the field, much like in the halacha of Steachuza. That was the approach of Ravina. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Uman de Asar Amar Lecha, Steachuza Hektishi, Virachamana Okmea Pidgeon, Hacha Halvahi Umechse Keribis. And the other Amoraim who disagreed with Ravina, who said that once the Lova begins to start paying off his debt, that's it, we have to now back away from consuming produce, they will argue that there's a fundamental distinction between the case of Steachuza versus a lova who begins to repay his debt. Because the Torah has a methodology of redemption for a steachuza. As we just pointed out, steachuza is consecrated. You consecrate the steachuza to Hekdesh, now you want to redeem it. So although it's true that the four zuz a year until Yovel that I'm paying for the steachuza doesn't come close to the value of the field and the value of the produce, but that's what the Torah says. The Torah has a methodology of pidgeon. That's the halacha. When it comes to, when it comes to repaying a debt, there is no such concept as redemption. In other words, you have to pay off the full value of the debt that you owe. So in a case of a halva, if the lova already began to repay his debt, allowing the malva to continue consuming produce is mechze keribis. It looks like a problem of ribis, and therefore those other amorim backed away from eating once the lova even began to make a dent on the debt that he owed. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Ravashi, Amruli Sade Demasa Mechasya, Stam Mashkanta Shata, Lemay Nafkamina, Dei Achila Shata Matzi Mesalikle, Veilo Lo Matzi Mesalikle. So Rav Ashi quoted from the elders of Masa Mechasya that a regular mortgaged collateralized property is 1 year. What does that mean practically? So that means that if the malve already consumed produce for a year, I, as the love, can now kick him off my field. I can say, get out of here. You're no longer allowed to continue consuming produce. But if it has not yet been a year, again, assuming that there were no specific stipulations attached to when the loan was lent out. In other words, he never said, I'm only going to lend this to you for a month, for 6 months. In other words, he didn't say anything. He didn't give a specific time period. The assumption is that he's allowed to consume produce from that field for up to a year. V'amar Ravashi, Amru li save de masa mechasya, mai mashkanta, de shchuna gabei, lemai nafkamina, ledina devar metra. Then Ravashi quotes another statement from the elders of Masa Mechasya regarding the etymology of the word mashkanta. Again, that word in Aramaic, mashkanta, mashkon, is a collateral or a mortgage. What does that word mean? So the Gemara says it's a contraction of de shchuna gabei. It means that the field effectively is in the possession of the malva. It doesn't really belong to him, but for all intents and purposes, he is considered to be the owner during that time when he's allowed to consume the produce. And the question is, what does that mean practically? Why do I care that he's really considered the owner? The Gemara says that has ramifications for a very famous halacha, which appears primarily in Maseches Bava Basra, that's called Dina Devar Metzra. Dina Devar Metzra refers to the fact that, let's say, for example, a person is selling a field, and there are multiple prospective buyers for the field, and one of the prospective buyers happens to be the neighbor or happens to have a field that's adjacent to the field of the seller. So that's called Dina Devar Metzra, that he gets first refusal. He gets first dibs on the, in other words, he gets the first opportunity to buy the field. That's called Dina Devar Metzra. So for these purposes, the malve during the time that he's consuming the produce is considered the owner vis-a-vis the laws of Dina Devar Metzra. Okay, then the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Leis Hilchasa, Lo Kitarshe Papunai, Velo Kishtari Michosnai, Velo Kachachire Narshai. Rava says that we do not paskin like the tacit interest of Rav Papa. Again, we're going to explain all these in a second. We don't paskin like the shtaros of Mechoza, and we don't paskin like the laws of tenancy for the city of Neresh. What on earth does any of this mean? Kitarshi papunai, kitarshi de Rav Papa. That's an allusion to a Gemara just a couple of daf ago in Daf Samachay, where the Gemara related that Rav Papa would sell liquor and beer to these prospective buyers. However, he would allow them to pay later at a higher rate. So Rav Papa thought that wasn't considered a violation of ribbis, and the Gemara says, we don't paskin like Rav Papa. We assume that's still considered to be a form of ribbis. That's the first thing that we don't paskin like. Then the Gemara says, shtarei michoznai, dezakfei le l'ravcha akarna, v'chasfei le b'shtara. The second thing we don't paskin like are like the shtaros of mechoza. What does that mean? So let's say, for example, you wanted to get an investment from someone, and they were going to go into a joint business venture. So someone was going to give you whatever $100,000 to go whatever to open a pizza store, and the agreement is that they were going to get half the profits. So normally that's totally fine. Right? So in other words, you want to make an investment, so the person who gave you the money is going to get, let's again whatever the agreement was, they're going to get half the profits. The problem is that in mechoza, once the profits were already accrued at the end of the day, they used to add that number into the shtar retroactively. So it wouldn't just be that, I borrowed $100,000 to make the investment, but if at the end of the day he ended up profiting $500,000, the shtar would say $600,000. So the Gemara says the problem with that is that, well, who says that the guy is going to end up making money? Maybe he's going to lose money. Maybe he's not going to make as much money as he initially thought he was going to make. So the Gemara actually relates a story based on this. Amar le mar bara meimar le ravashi, abba oved hachi, v'chi asu le kamei. So the Gemara relates that Mar, Amemar's son, would say about his father, Amemar, that he used to do this. He used to add into the shtar whatever the assumption, or in other words, however much the prospective investor thought he was going to a profit, that was the number they put into the shtar. If it turned out at the end of the day that the guy lost money or didn't make quite as much as he thought he would come back to Amemar, and Amemar believed him, and he would just lower the value of the shtar. He would just rewrite the shtar with whatever number he actually profited or lost, whatever it was. So the Gemara says, the problem is, Amar le, tein achicha de'isei l'didei, ishachiv v'nafil shtara kameyas me'mai. The Gemara says, that's all well and good if the investor is still alive. If he's still here, okay, so he can come to you, he can say, listen, I thought I was going to profit X, I only profited half, or I lost money, whatever it was. So fine, so then you can readjust the terms of the shtar. What if the investor died? What if the shtar falls into the lap of his yorshim now, and the yorshim have no idea what happened? They just see a shtar that says $600,000. They don't know that it was really $100,000 and there was a loss, whatever. So in other words, what's going to be in that case? So the Gemara comments, "Have kishgaga sheyotza milifnei ashalit the nach nafshi da'ameimar." The Gemara quotes this pasuk in many places. It's a pasuk in Koheles that says kishgaga sheyotza milifnei ashalit. It was like an erroneous statement that was issued by the authorities, by the government. In other words, what that means is that sometimes because Amemar made this declaration, he essentially preempted his own death. He ended up dying because he raised this question. It was like a mistaken, like an erroneous statement that came out of his mouth, and as a result, he ended up dying. Then the Gemara has the third case that we don't paskin like, Chachire Narshai, Dechas Vehachi, Mashkein Leplanya Are Leflanya, Vahadar Chachramine. Emas Kana da Akne Nihale. The Gemara relates that the part of the tenancy laws in the city of Neresh was that in a shtar, let's say again, Reuven wanted to borrow money from Shimon. So Shimon would say, okay, again, I want to have a security in case you default on the loan. He would say, I'm going to take your field as a form of security. And then what he would do is, because Reuven still wanted his field, he still wanted to be able to work his field, he would then lease that field back to Reuven at a higher price. So he would basically, which seems like a form of interest, because Shimon, in other words, Shimon never really acquired the field. So the Gemara says, but v'ha'idna de'kakas v'hachi kanina mine v'shahina kama idne v'hadar chachra k'dei shelo tinol delas bifnei lovin shapir damei v'lav milsahi. The Gemara thought that by adding this clause into the shtar, you could potentially circumvent the issue of ribbiser. How would you do that? By writing that Shimon, the Malvem, acquires the field from Reuven the Loveh, and in that fashion, he's actually going to hold on to the field and acquire the field for a certain period of time, and only then will he then lease the field back to Reuven at the higher price. So the Gemara thought that should overcome the issues of ribbis. Why exactly are we allowing Shimon to do this? Because we don't want to disincentivize people from lending money. This is a famous idea that appears all throughout Shas. Kadesh Shalot, Tenol, Delos, Bifnei, Loveh. We go out of our way to make it easy for people to lend money. We don't want to put roadblocks in the face of the Malveh. So I think Gemara says, initially that we thought adding this clause would override, would circumvent the concerns of Ribbis. However, the Gemara comments that the Lav will say this clause is not going to change anything. At the end of the day, it's still going to be problematic. We don't paskin like the tenancy, statements and clauses and declarations in the Shtaros of the city of Neresh. Okay, says the Mishnah. Ein moshivin chenvani lemachatzis schar velo yitein mos likach bahen peros lemachatzis schar ela imkein nosein lo scharo kifoel. Says the Mishnah the following. Imagine, again, this is the same concept we just alluded to before about a person wants to invest. So you have Reuven. Reuven's going to either give $100,000 worth of produce or money in order to buy produce to a shopkeeper. And he tells the shopkeeper, listen, either in the case of produce, either line your shelves with it, or in the case of money, go out and buy produce and then line your shelves with it. And again, we're going to split the profits. I'll take 50%. So the Mishnah says that Reuven, the Malveh, is not allowed to do that unless he pays Shimon, the shopkeeper, a salary. Because if he doesn't pay Shimon a salary, then Shimon is effectively working for free. He's working gratuitously for Reuven. Reuven is gaining from this venture because Shimon is there selling all the produce on his behalf, and he's able to take half the produce. So unless he goes out of his way to pay Shimon a salary, this is going to run into a problem of ribbis. Then the Mishnah has a very similar concept. Ein moshivin tarnegolin lemechza, ve'ein shamin agolin usiyachin lemechza, ela imkein nosein lo schar amalo umzono, aval mekablin agolin usiyachin lemechza, umegadlin osan ad sheyehu mishulashin, v'chamur ad shetehe to'enes. Then the Mishnah has another scenario that, let's say, for example, I have some eggs that, you know, potentially could hatch into chickens, but I don't have a mother chicken to sit on the eggs to cause them to hatch. So I now want to borrow a chicken from you to sit on these eggs to cause them to hatch. So I go over to Reuven and say I want to borrow the chicken. So basically, in other words, we can't just divide up the profits and say, okay, you'll take half the chicks and I'll take the other half. That's not going to work. And the same thing also, let's say in a case where you want to appraise or assess the value of young cows, calves or foals, young donkeys, whatever it is, you can't do that either unless you're, in other words, unless the person who is watching the animals is willing to pay for the labor as well as for the sustenance for the animals. Because again, if you're just allowing, if I'm the one who's now going to have to do all the work, in other words, I'm just borrowing the chicken, I'm just borrowing whatever it is from the other guy, but I'm doing all the work, I'm feeding the animals, so that's ribbis because the other party is gaining from that. He doesn't do anything and he's still profiting by getting half the chicks or by getting half the value of the animal. However, says the Mishnah, if the agreement was that basically I was going to watch the animal and the person who provided the animal was going to accept all the losses, and then I would, you know, take care of providing food for the animal and doing all the work, and then basically I would raise the animal until either it reached one third of maturation, or in the case of a donkey, until it was large enough to carry loads, meaning to say it became worthwhile to sell, people would now be willing to buy it, so that's okay. That's considered to be mutter, because there, basically the assumption is that no one is working for free. Everyone is gaining, everyone is getting exactly, is getting money commensurate to the effort that they put in to the venture. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tana kifoel batel. My kifoel batel, Amar Abaye, kifoel batel shall osa melacha devatel mine. So the question is, what exactly did the Mishnah mean in the first case when it said that the only way that I can give money or give produce to the shopkeeper to sell for me is only if I pay him a salary? The question is, what does that mean exactly? How am I paying him? So the Gemara explains that I'm paying him as if he's an idle worker, meaning to say, I'm essentially going to pay him whatever money he would have taken to skip work for the day. However much money he would have made for working for today, that's what I have to pay him, and that overrides, that circumvents the concern of ribbis. And the Gemara just points out, Utsricha, the itana chenvani, chenvani hu tisagi le kifoa batal mishum de lo nafish tirche, avo ma'u selikach bahen peros de nafish tirche ema lo sagi le kifoa batal, the itana ma'u selikach bahen peros hava amina hasam hu divai kifoa The Gemara just points out textually why the Mishnah felt the need to present two scenarios that basically seem to be highlighting the same point. The Mishnah said that I, as the Malveh, can either give money to the shopkeeper who can then turn around and buy produce to line the shelves as long as I also pay him a salary, or I can just give him the produce directly. The The question is, what's the difference between those two cases? So basically, the Gemara's point is the following. If I give the shopkeeper produce directly, so that cuts out a lot of the tircha. It's not such a big deal for him to lie in his shelves. It's not like he has to go out to the market, take the money, and then buy the produce, and then lie in the shelves. But in other words, so I might have argued, says the Gemara, that in a case where I just give him the produce directly, so perhaps that's the only case where I can pay him like an idle worker, because he's not really doing anything. I mean, he's just lining his shelves. It's not like he has to go out to the marketplace to buy produce to then stock up his shelves. On the other hand, if we only had the case of giving him the money, so I could have argued that maybe, again, he's going to demand higher wage. In other words, he's going to be satisfied with being paid like an idle worker, because in that scenario, he actually did work. He actually had to go out to buy produce, whereas in a case where I just gave him the produce directly, so he's going to be satisfied with even less than that, with even less than the value of an idle worker. In other words, I could just give him a little bit of food, a little bit of bread to dip in brine, or a little bit of, one fig. That might be sufficient to constitute his wages to override the concern of ribbis. Says the Gemara, no, Tzricha, you see from here that both these cases are necessary to teach me that I have to pay this guy his wages, the shopkeeper his wages, in order to circumvent the prohibition of ribbis. Now the next question, of course, is Tana Rabbanan, kama hu scharo. So the question is, what exactly are these wages? How much do I have to pay this guy in order to override the prohibition of ribbis? So that's a further machlokas. So says the Gemara, bein merube uvein mua divir Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Huda omer afilu lo tava limob ela bitzir velo acha limob ela grogeres achas zehu scharo, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai omer no silos chor mesham. It's a three-way machlokas in the Gemara. According to Rabbi Meir, anything you pay him is fine. In other words, there's no minimum, there's no maximum. Pay him anything, that circumvents ribbis. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he basically says even more extreme than that. He says that there's basically no, in other words, he says even if you just give him a little bit of bread to dip in brine, or even just a fig to eat, that's already considered to be his wages. And Rav Shimon ben Yochai says, no, you have to pay him his full wages. Whatever is considered a normal salary for the shopkeeper, that's what you have to pay. Tana Rabbana. Ein shaman lo es ha'izim v'lo es ha'rechilim v'lo kol dover she'eno osev v'ochel l'mechza. Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Huda omer shaman es ha'izim mipnei she'cholvos v'yesa rechilim mipnei she'gozizos v'shotfos u'mortos v'yesa tarnagoles mipnei she'hu osev v'ochelos. And the Gemara presents the following machlokas. According to the Tana Kama, in a case of animals like goats or like sheep or really any animal, the Gemara says that doesn't produce based on the amount of effort that I put into taking care of that animal. I'm not going to get out of it what I put into it. So the Gemara says in those types of cases, if let's say there was some kind of an increase in the value of the animal, so I'm not allowed to take that increase because that increase is purely incidental. I'm not getting anything out of that animal. However, Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Huda disagrees with that. He says that, let's say, for example, in the case of goats, so there's going to be goat's milk. In the case of the sheep, so I can take the wool, either because I'm shearing the sheep or because I'm washing the sheep and the wool comes off, or there are thorns that were caught in the wool and I'm plucking off the wool with the thorns. Whatever the case is, there is some profit to be gained from these animals. Or in the case of the chickens, it's going to produce eggs. So there is profit to be had here that would override the concern of ribbis. So then the question is, well, according to the Tana Kama, are the shearings of wool and the milk that the goats produce, is that not enough to cover or to justify the fact that the person watching the animals has to pay for the sustenance of the animals and to cover his wages? So the Gemara says, no, you're right. The Giza v'chal of kuliyama lo plige, ki plige bin isyove v'susre. Tana Kama savar la ki Rav Shimon ben Yochai da'amar no se lo schara mishalim. Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Huda savar la ka'avua da'amar afilu lo tava limo ela bitzir v'lo acha limo ela grogeres achas zehu scharo. The Gemara says, you're right. If it's a case where there's real milk that's coming out of the goat and there's real shearings of wool that are, you know, that you can sell, that's coming off of the sheep, so then you're right. So that's going to cover the cost. That's going to defray the cost for any effort, any sustenance that the person watching the animal has to provide. However, the machlokas is, what if the animal is not producing regular milk or regular wool is being shorn off the animal, but it's just the whey of the milk. So, right, the W-H-E-Y, the whey from the milk. Or it's just the little pluckings from the wool. It's not really anything substantial. So that's that's the machlokas. The Tana Kama holds a Kershim Ben Yochai that you need to pay this guy his full wages. So giving the guy some of the curds in the whey, or giving the guy some of the pluckings of the wool, is nothing. That's not going to cover, that's not going to defray the cost of what you really owe him, and therefore that would be a violation of ribbis, because he's working, in other words, you're getting more out of him than what you're giving to him. He's working not you know, technically for free, but basically for free. And Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He holds like his father, Rabbi Yehuda, that even if you just give the worker a little bit of bread with brine, or even a fig, that's enough. That's sufficient to overcome and to override the prohibition of ribbis. Okay, look at where it says, Tana Rabbana. Maskeris isha lachaverta tarnagoles b'shnei efrochin. So again, very similar to the earlier cases that we mentioned in the Gemara. Again, let's say, for example, a woman has a bunch of eggs and she wants to, you know, borrow a chicken or whatever it is, or to rent out a chicken to have the eggs hatch, so she can come up with this agreement with the other woman to say, I'm going to give you two of the chicks that hatch in exchange for, you know, for allowing me to rent out this chicken. Isha she'amra lachaverta, tarnegoles shali uveitzim shalichi, va'ani va'at nachlok be'efrochin, Rabbi Yehuda matir, Rabbi Shimon oser. Then the Gemara says, what if the woman says to the other one, she says, the chicken is mine and you're going to keep the eggs, and then me and you are going to divide the chicks, all the chicks that hatch from the eggs, we're going to divide that. So Rabbi Yehuda says, that's fine, there's no issue of ribbis, they're dividing everything equally. However, Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says, no, that's still considered to be problematic, that's going to run into a concern of ribbis. So asks the Gemara of Rabbi Yehuda, lo bai schara malom zono. So doesn't Rabbi Yehuda agree to the thesis that we mentioned in the Gemara earlier, that by dividing the chicks, that's going to defray the costs of however much effort the woman put in into raising, into having the eggs hatch, or into the amount of sustenance that she has to feed the chicken? So the Gemara says, no, ika beitza muzaros. There are also unfertilized eggs amongst the eggs that are not going to hatch into animals, and therefore she won't gain anything out of that. So in other words, you still have to pay her in order to defray the costs of the unfertilized eggs that were in the batch of eggs. Okay, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan. Makum shenagu lahalo schar kasif lima'os livehim amalin ve'ein mishanen miminag hamedina. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer shaman egel imimo v'siachim imo v'afilu b'makum shenagu lahalo schar kasif lima'os. So then Gemara quotes a further machlokas. Let's say you live in a place where the practice was that you would hire someone, you would hire a porter, he would carry your stuff for you. So in this case, he would schlep around your animal. So the Gemara says that you can add that fee, the porter's fee, into the initial agreement. So again, I'm renting the chicken from you, I'm renting whatever it is, whatever animal it is that I'm borrowing from you. So if there's an additional fee, because we live in a place where people hire porters to schlep their animals for them, you could tack that on into the initial agreement. And the Gemara says, according to the Tanna Kamma, we should never alter or deviate from whatever the common practice is. And Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel disagrees and says that you can assess, you can make assessments for the baby calf or the baby foal with its mother. You could factor that into the initial agreement. However, the value that you add on for the porter, that can never be added on to the original agreement. So again, asks the Gemara for Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, lo bai schara malom zono. Does Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel not agree that you need to, again, defray the costs of however much effort or the sustenance that's being provided? So the Gemara says, no, Ika Galalim, you're getting that back, you're having those costs defrayed in the form of the dung and the manure of the animal that could be used as fertilizer. The Idach, Galalim, Afkurim, Afkur, and the Tarakama will disagree and say, no, that the dung is made hefker, that no one's going to take the dung as a form of repayment. So that issue is going to explain whether there's a concern of ribbis and whether you're allowed to tack on to the initial agreement the value of the porter's fee. And finally, the Gemara says, Amar of Nachman, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, v'halacha k'Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Yehuda, v'halacha k'Rabban Shimon Gamliel, comes Rav Nachman and says that in all three of the cases that we mentioned previously, we seem to paskin, again, we're going to see the second Gemara, that we actually don't paskin this way in the end, but it seems, at least at this stage in the Gemara, that we paskin like these dissenting views, that we think in the case of the women who agreed to divide the chicks, we say that's okay, like Rabbi Yehuda said. We also assume, like Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara earlier, that even if the agreement was to just pay the, in other words, to just pay the guy just in the form of bread with brine or even one fig, that's also okay. And the Gemara seems to also say that we pass in like Rav Shimon Gamliel in the Gemara earlier as well, where again we assume that that you can override the issue of the shopkeeper just by giving him a little bit. You don't have to pay him his full wages. However, the Gemara has a story that we'll see in a second is actually going to run contrary to this idea. B'nei Rav Ilish nafik alayu ha-hushtara tahavaksiv be-palga ba-agar palga be-hefzin. So Rav Ilish died and his sons found a star that basically showed that his father, that their late father went into business with some guy, into some kind of a joint business venture, and the star, by its normal text, seemed to indicate that Rav Ilish was in violation of Ribbis D'Oraisa, because the star said that he was going to take half the wages and half the loss, which on its surface basically means that he's going to, in other words, he's going to gain more than the other guy. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Rav Ilish Gavra Rabahu, V'Isur Le'en Shelo HaVasafik. Rav Ilish was obviously a huge Talmud Chacham, and there's no way that he violated Ribbis. There must be a mistake in the text of the Shtar. That was Rava's assumption. So he says, Manavshach, I palga ba'agar treitilte behefseid, I palga behefseid treitilte ba'agar. The Shtar must have meant to say that if Rav Ilish is going to gain half the profits, he's going to lose two-thirds, and if he's going to lose half, then the other guy is going to gain two-thirds. That would be a more even distribution that wouldn't run into issues of ribbis. So Amar Rav Kahana, Amrisa l'shmaita kamedu Rav Zvid min harda ve'amar li, Dilma Rav Ilish tovel imo betzir hava. So comes Rav Kahana and pushes back back on Rava's assumption that, well, maybe, you know, the text of Rav Ilish's joint business venture star was erroneous. Maybe not. Maybe Rav Ilish was assuming, like, that dissenting view that we quoted in the Gemara earlier, which the Gemara seemed to say that we paskin like, that even if you just pay the worker, you pay the other guy in bread dipped in brine and in even one fig, that's already sufficient to circumvent the prohibition of ribbis. Maybe the initial text of the star was correct, and Rav Ilish was basically paying this guy off in a very minimalistic way in order to override the issur of ribbis. The Amar of Nachman halacha k'rabbina. We just established a second ago that we seem to paskin that way, that that's okay. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Amar le lav hilchasa itmar elashita itmar. Rav Kahana corrected the record on this. He says, it's not true. We don't paskin like Rav Yehuda. We don't assume that just giving the worker a little bit of bread or whatever, or a fig, is enough to override ribbis. That was a dissenting opinion that we dafka do not paskin like. And the Gemara, in fact, points out, hachi nami mistabra, de ilo tema hachi, lama le lemichshavu lememar halacha halacha, lema halacha k'rabbi Yehuda demeka mikulu. Rav Kahana was so convinced that this was correct, that this shita was a dissenting that we do not paskin like. He said, because if you look at Rav Nachman's statement, he says, halacha k'rabbi Yehuda, v'halacha k'rabbi Yosi v'rabbi Yehuda, v'halacha k'rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Why did he feel the need to go out of his way to specify that we paskin like these dissenting views three times? Rav Yehuda's position is the most meka one. The fact that I could override the prohibition of ribbis by basically throwing a bone at the guy, by saying, here, take some bread and brine, here, take a fig, and that's going to somehow magically override ribbis, is by far the most meka shita that we quoted on today's daf. So if it was really true that Rav Yehuda's position was accepted lahalacha, Rav Nachman could have simply quoted that shita, and we would have inferred that, of course, we passed like all the other more machmir shitas. The fact that he had to say halacha like this one, halacha like that one, halacha like that one, means that we actually don't accept them. In other words, that those are actually dissenting views that we do not paskin like, and therefore the Gemara says, we have to go back to our original answer, to Rava's answer, that the whole text of Rav Ilish's star was actually erroneous. Not that it was correct, but he was just following Rav Yehuda. No, because again, we don't possibly like Rav Yehuda. It must be that the text of the star was actually erroneous, and that was why Rava was there to correct the record on that.